Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast for Saturday, May 9th, 2009 with Tim Elliott on sports.
Hey, how's it going? I feel like I'm the Colbert Report.
Graham Thickens on technology and venture capital. And all Phil Wilson on home economics and laundry.
Hi, Steve.
I know that was bad, but I just had to.
You go to sites like Shorpy, so there must be some site that has bad opening news themes or something.
When I was podcasting on my own, listening to myself talk to myself, pretending that there were actually humans on the other end listening.
Much like this.
But at least you listen. It's in GarageBand. I bought a Loops CD and... it's got all kinds of great stuff on it. But so on today's show, we'll be talking about a bunch of different stuff. A meeting that, thank you again, Graham, for connecting me with Gary Smaby. We'll talk about what he's doing over at the U of M. Mini demo, tiny URL, and what's happened with Bitly and things of that nature. And how's that sound?
Sounds good.
Good. Good.
And how about things Phil learned about Twitter this week?
Did you learn some new things, Phil?
Oh, I'm constantly learning things about Twitter. All the limitations that I had no idea existed.
Well, and you know what? This is I even found. In fact, we should probably. I haven't really seen it yet, so we can't talk about it. But Best Buy is releasing an ideation site, and I saw Gary Kohling's tweet on that. So I went and looked and. So there you go again, Twitter to the rescue. But let's talk about Gary Smaby, because there are so many people who kept saying to me, you really got to meet this guy. I mean, you really have to connect with this guy because, you know, you guys will have a million things to talk about. And you mentioned to Graham and you were kind enough to send him an email, and he is so open and such a great guy. He says, yeah, let's get together. And the three of us got together on Wednesday afternoon. And for those people that don't know who Gary is, the guy's obviously been, or he's been an entrepreneur at the beginning of his career. And then he was with Piper Jaffray and then Needham & Company. And then he started a fund. And the guy's just done all kinds of amazing. He was like Mr. Supercomputer at Piper Jaffray, the go-to guy for all of that. Then he ended up as a strategic advisor to the U of M and a managing director and VC in residence for its innovative ventures MBA program. And now he's involved in leading what euphemistically is called the collaboratory, but it's a way of it's innovation by design. It's really about pulling together, groups, cross-functional groups, but starting with market need, and technology is like the last thing versus the way a lot of the initiatives have been before, which is starting with the patents and then going out and trying to find somebody to license them.
They're calling it a pioneering methodology for creating multi-party university industrial collaborations, university/industrial collaborations.
That rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, I'm reading this link that you provided, which is a long PDF that goes into a lot of detail on this. So
it does. I'll put a link in the show notes so people can read it. But
what kinds of things are coming out of this, or has anything really come out of it yet?
Good question.
Well, yeah,
because that was when I read this this document, I didn't get a sense for what types of either services or products or whatever they were sort of incubating here.
Well, in terms of market segments, the top one is energy. So anything that's energy centric. And what was the device that he talked about, Graham?
I'm trying to remember. I wasn't taking notes. Was it an energy-related device now?
Yeah, refresh my memory. Well, it was what I took from it, and maybe he'll send us an email and say, you guys, weren't you listening to me? We should have been taking notes. But, there's that whole smart grid initiative, and that there's a need for devices to be able to connect to electric using devices, appliances, things of that nature, and to be able to regulate the consumption. So if they're turned off, for example, as we all know, there's a little trickle of electricity that goes through everything that's plugged in, that it does consume some electricity. So what if you could turn all those off in the house that are, were items that didn't need it? And so they've actually connected up with corporate funders and sponsors who are, you know, like Honeywell and 3M and many others who are interested in this kind of research and trying to fund these breakthroughs to move forward on these sorts of things. So that's really the only thing demonstrable that he talked about was that there's apparently something close to launching that's going to be smart grid centric.
So will it be like a home server kind of a thing where I'm going to be able to see what devices in my house are consuming the most electricity and that kind of thing? Or?
Well, it could be, because Honeywell is one of the sponsors, and this goes back many years now when I was at Vignette calling on Honeywell, that they had a home server and little nodes that would you'd plug in your appliance and then plug the node into the electrical socket. And the home server could then monitor electrical consumption. And apparently you could make some modifications to it through the server. And I've never seen that come, you know, see the light of day. It's never shipped.
But it's happening right here in town.
And it is happening right here in town. And so, and it's about innovation. So how about that?
Wow, this sounds like something we should talk about. I'm Innovate.
Yeah. Tim, you are just way too excited.
Yeah. Tim's had his coffee this morning. There's no doubt
indeed,
about that.
I'm on my second pot right now, in fact.
Great. Well, let's segue into mini demo and talk about that, shall we?
Sure.
Sure.
So
did anybody go?
Well, no, I missed it.
Tim couldn't make it, unfortunately.
I'm looking for some download on this. I didn't see anyone write about it, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, people were tweeting, but that was about, you know, and unfortunately there was not a stream, and people were tweeting, hey, where's the stream? And then people out in because it was just, place was packed, and people stayed out in the slightly cooler area drinking beer. And we're saying, you know, how come you guys aren't streaming through these monitors or up through that projection where there was a Twitter stream? And so we don't have
always room for improvement and innovation.
It is.
But I thought it was one of the better ones that we had over at Intermedia Arts was right. Where it was held again. And yes, it was a little warm in the auditorium or in the theater section. I tried to stay close to the cement floor.
Is that why you were laying down?
But it was it was a lot of fun.
So what was the most surprising demo that you didn't know about, you know, that you thought, wow, this is a great idea?
I only saw three of them, and none were really surprising because I'd read about them in advance. So or some of them anyway. The pen manufacturer was kind of different. I don't think it's a real business yet, but showing that you could actually design your own pen online, you know, using CAD tools, and then actually choose to have it manufactured and purchase it online and have it sent out to you. But the guy hasn't even set any prices yet. But you know, that was sort of cool. I don't know if it's a business, but.
Well,
there is a segment of the population, Graham, that is completely bonkers over pens.
You'll see guys
every once in a while that have, you know, lovely display cases of their pens. And, you know, I kind of liken it to the same sort of folks that are into collecting watches and things like that.
Yep.
Which I do on a regular basis, but they have to be watches under $60. So
yeah, that much, huh?
Well, I was really surprised by seeing stuff in Skimmer that I didn't even know was there.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing.
It just
like,
blew
hey, wait,
away.
And the same thing with Extender. I was like, yes. Wait, what? I just had lunch with Joseph, and it's like, where? what the, hey.
Well, you know, and a lot of people said, so big deal, you know, you got Google profile and whatever. But, you know, I will say that what I absolutely thought was outstanding was the new tour function.
Yes.
About being able to basically, you know, have a, you know, it's a frame. So people hate frames, but at the top, you're able to click through all of the places where you leave your digital breadcrumbs all over. So again,
you're talking extender right now, right?
Correct. And so again, you're making it easy for people. And I'm a big fan of, I love you guys and I love, you know, the people that I'm connected to, but I don't want to see absolutely every single thing you're saying or you're doing or your images that you're leaving on Flickr. I don't want to see everything, you know, put the really important
things. So I should put my pants back on? Is that what you're saying?
Please do.
So that's why you're not subscribed to my friend feed, I guess, Steve. Huh?
I really don't use friend feed very much. I really don't. But you know that was a real surprise, though, was that people that I talked to afterwards kind of didn't get Siteware, that RFID inventory system. And having both played in the retail space and also when I was at Vignette working with 3M, and they were talking about how absolutely stunned and blown away they were by working with Walmart on point of sale, and they could literally run a coupon in the Atlanta area and they could see the sell through in near real time, and how incredibly important that was to not only see if something is working, but to be able to test and make it more efficient. And then also, you know, do inventory replenishment, because they could then back up and say, well, you know, we got to make more of the yellow post-it notes or whatever they were doing.
Yeah, I thought that was a very interesting demo, and interesting that I got the same thing from a couple of people that didn't really necessarily feel like they got it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
like, what's this good for? I don't understand. And, you know, especially in the clothing retail space, because there are so many different colors, sizes, and, you know, just styles, that's going to be, I think you got to look at the what the benefit is for the consumer. The fact of the matter is that they know exactly when a size is gone and they can replace it instead of, you know, you go to the thing and they're just like, oh, I love this. And there's not your size. So.
Well, in this, I don't know if you guys agree with this, but I think this was the most eclectic group of presentations yet at a mini demo.
I think I would agree. I mean, everything from Zach Johnson's presentation of his tools, which were very, you know, code oriented, geek oriented sort of stuff, right up into the pen guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then, doing the interviews was fun. We're going to have a video from 612 Authentic. Jed was there shooting video, and you did most of the interviews, Phil. I did a couple, and we're going to compile those and deliver those. But the people that I met this time were really atypical. It was fun to see Andy Johnson, the CEO of W3i, and Ryan Weber, one of the co-founders there. You know, they're participating, but I walked up and interviewed a guy, Mainul Khan, who's created something called fieldnation.com. Mm-hmm. And the best way to describe it is kind of a cross between rentacoder.com and Geek Squad. You can, you know, whatever you need, if you need home theater installation or you need help with routers or networking, you know, if you've got a small to mid-sized business, you can go there and you can find people in your area. And apparently they've got about what says that you have 10,000 people signed up for it right now. And so it's a pretty interesting concept. But then I met a guy that, and I'm sorry I didn't get his card, but runs a, I think he runs the Coalition, Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. But we got into this whole conversation about how they're really leveraging open source and web applications, and how many of these agencies that deal with the homeless, and there's, you know, like 30 or 40 of them in the Twin Cities and around the state, are beginning to coordinate and orchestrate their activities through the web and connecting with one another in new ways. And I think that's kind of I'm going to find out more. I think that's kind of a fascinating concept. Who did you guys talk to that you thought were kind of unusual or interesting or new people you might have met?
Well, this guy, one of the new sponsors, Startup Shop, is kind of interesting. J.C. Guregan, who helps startups with all their kind of infrastructure, helps them with web, you know, setting up their websites and their phone systems and their, you know, networks and so forth. But beyond that, he even helps them with branding and signage and all sorts of stuff. So that's kind of an interesting concept. I hadn't really heard much about it up until now, but he's been doing this for several years.
Really? Yeah, and I hadn't heard about it either.
Yeah, kind of an interesting guy. Just go to Startup Shop, shoppe.com.
I'll put that in the show notes too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was fun running into him, and I chatted with Scott Lippman briefly too. Magnet 360 is now a sponsor of Mini Demo. So we had a good lineup of sponsors, and a lot of the, returning ones, of course, New Council and Split Rock.
Right.
And let's see, who else did I run into? Oh, your old buddy from Yugma, Ron, the investor in Yugma.
Evan Steiner
was there.
Oh, you're kidding me. I didn't see him. Oh, that's
you
too
missed
bad.
Him?
Yeah, I did. I didn't see him at all.
It's the first time I've seen him show up on one of these deals. So, you know, the investor guys, the angels, the money guys are starting to show up at these deals. And Tom Von Custer came again. He drops in almost every one, though. And these are good things. I mean, I didn't see Mike Gorman from Split Rock, but we did have Jamie Thingelstadt
there,
who's
there,
now an entrepreneur in residence
right.
with Split Rock. So we had some good representation from the local angel community, which is good. So let's see, who else did I speak with? Ran into a professor from St. Thomas, A.C. Johnson, a real interesting guy. Who also happens to be a photographer. Talk about a interesting combination. Also chatted with the Reside folks, which is one of the companies that's affiliated with the Magnet 360 network.
Who was there from Reside? I had breakfast with Matt Means, the CEO, like a week ago.
I think he might have been the guy that ended up next to me. I'm not sure. There were like three or four of them. There was that one lady and then a few guys that were, all together sitting in a row in the second row.
Was I at a different venue or something? I mean, geez.
Yeah. Well, it was hard to run into everybody you want to run into. There were enough people there, and with the two different rooms, you could miss people.
Right.
I was missing people that I knew were there, and people were saying, I was trying to introduce Andy Johnson from W3I to the DoApp folks, because I don't think he'd ever actually met them, and I couldn't find them. And it's like, I knew they were there, and with those two fairly big rooms, and they're sort of different pockets off of that front room, it's sort of a gallery, I guess, is what it is, right? And so it was hard to find everybody, but there was a lot of schmoozing and networking going on.
Also,
I was meeting a lot of new people, and people were coming up to me that knew me, and that I was trying to remember. Now, how do I know these people? And I have to say, no, refresh my memory. You look familiar, but it was dynamite networking. I mean, lots of good conversations and card exchanging and people were in a happy springtime mood, and the beer was a plenty. They ran out last time later in the evening, but this time they seem to have plenty. So,
Well, and it's the one thing that, it's like when I walk into a library and I realize I'm never going to be able to read, more than a handful of these books. Once I learn to read anyway. but it's the same thing with this. I mean, it's like, I'm not going to ever be able to meet all the people. I think we need hello tags at these. I'm going to recommend
that.
They
didn't have name tags this time. And I thought, that's weird. Those are cheap. I mean, why don't I, have a Sharpie and, hello, my name is.
When I said something to Luke about the streaming, or asked him a question about the streaming when we got there at 6 o'clock, he said, oh man, you have no idea all the stuff going on. Plus them trying to pull all this together. And they're doing it like we're doing it with Minovate as a labor of love. And they want to do it and bring people together. And so, you know, it's not like they're, you know, project manage this, managing this full time. And it's hard. It's really hard.
Oh, yeah. They do a great job. And, you know, they could probably recruit more volunteers. Somebody would have been happy to go to, you know, Office Depot and pick up some stick on name badges the way there. I mean, I would have, you know, but so they that was missing a little bit. But, you know, I think people had a great time and there were a lot of new faces, more and more people from the advertising and digital, you know, marketing, you know, interactive marketing community are showing up at these things. Tim Brunel, one of our MEMA, you know, highly involved people in MEMA was there and he's, you know, teaches at MCAD. And he and I chatted about how there's really a desire on his part, on the MEMA crowd he wants to create a desire to get that group closer to the developer community and get the two groups talking, you know, more because they kind of speak different languages, you know. And I said, it's funny you'd bring that up, Tim, because I just invited a really smart iPhone app developer, one of my CodeMorphic buddies, to go to your MEMA MCAD event on Monday night. I can't, I'll be in Denver, but they're having some big time interactive agency guru from New York or somewhere come in to speak. And I told Bill Hyman at CodeMorphic, I said, go there and hear what these guys talk about when they talk about branding and brand experiences, because you know that's the kind of iPhone apps these guys are being called on to do. Is, you know, branded apps, you know, for large consumer brands. And so I said, you got to start hanging around these guys and learning to talk their language. And they want to know, you know, more about you. And Tim said, have that guy find me, you know, on Monday night. I said, I definitely will, you know.
What's interesting about you bringing that up is that, I was at an event when Adobe Air was starting to take off and Ryan Stewart, the evangelist for Adobe Air, was part of that bus tour where they were taking buses to all these cities and doing dog and pony shows about Adobe Air. Mm-hmm. But it was all 100% of it was targeted at developers because they were trying to get the developers on board and so on. And the woman who runs marketing, the VP of marketing for the Adobe Air category, We talked at a show and I said, you know, you guys, you're not talking to people with checkbooks. You're not talking about or talking to people who have specific business needs and you're not sharing the vision of what these apps can do. And I know that, you know, part of it is let's get a critical mass out there and then maybe people will think of their own ideas and then go have them built. But that's kind of, you know, cart before the horse. I like that idea of bringing MEMA together with developers because it's if people know what's possible, mm-hmm. then they can go get the developers to help them manifest that possibility into some physical form that can, or, you know, yeah. some digital form that can go out. If it's a web app or an Air app or a Silverlight app or, you know, whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. It can't be 100% developer centric. We got to get the business users excited too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, outfits like Sierra Bravo, who work so closely with the advertising and marketing community to develop,
right.
You know, they already know this game. I mean, they're very tight with those folks, but I think, you know, I think the there's a large part of the rest of the community here that needs to, you know, just understand the needs of the market more and more. So, I thought that was, and the guys from Fallon were there. I spoke with them again. So, you know, it was a good mix at Mini Demo. And you know, I think, what is our total count of people on that list now? It's got to be 400 or 500 people at least.
Yeah.
In the Mini Bar, Mini Demo community, quote unquote. You know, MEMA is what, 1,000 members now? I mean, between these two organizations.
Well, but you have 550 in the social media breakfast. And there's got to be a lot of overlap. But then you have the International Association of Business Communicators, and I think they've got like 800 or 900 members. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys that's a videographer has his own video company, does in commercials. He's a director as well. Got together with me for coffee. I hadn't seen the guy for 5 years, and he said, "Can you help me understand Twitter? Can you help me because it's all anybody's talking about." And so there's demand for knowledge about all of this coming from all of these different areas. And there's got to be a way to bring people together and connect people in a different way. And
these events definitely help, you know. And it's inspiring to see. And there was a lot of upbeat talk about what a great community we have, and you know, it's a strong developer community. And and there are new startups bubbling up. Matt Bauer's working on a real interesting plan, thinking about Minnesota Cup, which closes deadline is May 22nd for applications for new startups to enter the annual business plan competition, Minnesota right. Cup. And I'll be doing a post on that today. Each year, I think they get more and more entries and they've expanded the categories. And I'll post about that later. There's a lot of entrepreneurial energy in the mini demo group alone. And that's, I think maybe even been heightened during the recessionary times, which I like to think we're coming out of now. So,
well, it sure looks that way. There are a lot of great signs that are pointing in that direction. Hey, let's talk about what happened, because we were chatting about this briefly before we started the show with, by the way, that fabulous intro music. The concept of URL shortening and what happened with Tiny URL and Twitter shifting to Bitly. And Tim, you had some specific reasons because of analytics. And oh, by the way, MEMA has an event coming up, Analytics for People Who Hate Analytics, Wednesday, May 20th. I'll put that in the show notes too.
I'm not going to go because I love analytics.
You do?
You're an analytics geek.
Yeah, I just love it. So I can't go to a thing like that. Plus it costs $40. So
Yeah.
Anyway.
You know, you guys really should join. Really, it's okay.
Oh, Phil, you
just feel free to step right up and pay a fee.
There you go.
Or are you still all locked onto this business of free crap?
Well, no. As soon as I get a job at an agency in town that'll pay, then I'll pay.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I understand their business model. So
yes, and you'd be great at that.
They got a lot of membership fees that they take in, and they're a very cash rich organization. Meme is, but I do like you, Tim. I pay by the drink. I just pay for occasional events that I go to. They have some free events though too. I think that one Monday night, the Meme MCAD thing is free.
Yep, it is. But have you tried to buy a drink at the Fine Line? It ain't cheap.
Oh, I don't know.
It's a beer, a draft beer. I think a beer is like $12, something like that.
Oh no.
All right, we're getting off topic. But Tim, no. you are the guy. Yeah,
so Bitly Twitter and Tiny URL.
Well, I mean, and you're the guy that has all the classic marketing background and all the new media, social media background. And so you've got probably the strongest perspective of any of us of why you think that they chose Bitly over Tiny URL. And
Well, I used Tiny URL for years and I like to root for the home team and all, but I think they were passed by Bitly and others a while ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that Twitter is getting in position to really put together a platform that will be more attractive to companies and brands and advertisers. And to do that, they're going to need to have metrics built into the platform. And so it only makes sense that they go with Bitly or someone like that that does have that as part of the service.
Yeah.
I mean, I switched to Bitly a while ago just because it was shorter than Tiny URL and it had the analytics. And then more recently they've added full Twitter integration, which makes it really easy to just hit the marklet and send a tweet out, which I've been using quite a bit.
What are those analytics showing you? Tell people what you're getting from that.
You get click-through information. So it's just the same as if you have it on your running on your website. So you can see, you know, how many people clicked on your link, when they clicked on them, et cetera. So.
Cool. You know, the other thing about Bitly and Twitter, you know, it's kind of an inside job because, correct me if I'm wrong, but the same VC, at least one of the same VCs is invested in both. I'm pretty sure Fred Wilson at Union Square Ventures is one of the guys who put some money into Bitly. What was Jamie Thingelstad saying? Was it a $2 million investment they got recently?
I'm not sure if he used a number, but it was.
Yeah, I think he said it was $2 million or approximately at a $15 million valuation. But you have to understand that the VCs behind the scenes here have something to do with this too. You know, there's a tie there between Twitter and Bitly.
Right.
Well, I'm sure that didn't hurt, but I think from a technology standpoint, that Bitly is a better choice for Twitter.
Well, but what I'm saying is, I think they planned it that way. This is
for
a long time. Yep.
Yep. Right. Because when Twitter first started, I think that TinyURL was the only game in town.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then there was no compelling reason to switch until now.
Yeah. And TinyURL had a long ride. I mean, it's essentially 2 years or more than that. If you go back to the beta, it's 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So they've amassed a major amount of data, right? TinyURL.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have that. But I think the thing with Kevin Gilbertson, the founder of TinyURL, based in Blaine, Minnesota, a competitive unicyclist in his spare time, I think, you know, the fact that there really is no business plan there that I'm aware of. It's a one man company. You know, what's the end game? That's what we've all been wondering is, you know, where is this thing going to go? Does he have a plan to go forward to turn this into a business? Is he seeking funding? He, you know, apparently not. I mean, it's been a very quiet, private, one man show.
I don't think that URL shortening is unique enough to, you know, have an exit strategy which says you get bought by somebody or something, you know?
Well, that's the story, I guess. I mean, URL shortening has been getting written about a lot. In fact, I chatted with Garrick, right? Garrick Van Buren, our old buddy and former contributor here, who runs Collect. And apparently he's been writing on his blog a lot about URL shortening lately. And I need to go read. Have any of you guys read what he's been?
No, I haven't seen it specifically, but of course, you know, he did the shortened URL for MinPost, mm-hmm. As an example, and I know he's been doing some more of those as well. But you know, it is interesting because one of the guiding principles that I use with clients is, you know, if you're going to choose a video platform or a video delivery service, make sure there's analytics behind it. Same thing with widgets. You know, a Tube Mogul. Or for video, or iWidgets, or Sprout Builder for creating your own self-contained widget of some ilk, that you want to be able to know if it's out on somebody's blog, you know, if it's out on Joe's blog and he's got 3,000 readers a month, and it's over on Sue's blog and she's got 25,000 a month, you want to know so you can figure out who your influencers are and. You know, people mm-hmm. that are spawning the viral delivery of something. You want to know where your bread's buttered, and without analytics, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Plus, Mashable did. I'm going to go find this. They did a thing a while back on like 100 or a whole bunch of URL shortening services. And to your point, Tim, I mean, what's the differentiator? I mean, how do you live in a world where there's 100 options?
The only thing that you can do is go down to a 2 or 1 letter URL, I guess. I mean, yeah. I think we're getting down to the point where it's just to save a character or two.
Oh, yeah. You can only get so short, though. I mean, that's why I use isgood, is.gd, just to save another character, too. That's why I stopped using Bitly. I'm just going for short, you know. And then, and as long as it works fast, which it does, is good. I'm happy with it, you know. And somebody else told me, I think Lee Auden told me about trimtr.im. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
So there's another one that's only four letters.
I'm going to start one called Sly. So it's S.L.Y.
Hey, there you go. If that'll work, like do it.
I don't think that one letter URLs are allowed.
Oh, well, okay. But don't talk about it. Do it on the sly.
So. Right. Yeah.
You're now not the only one thinking it, Tim.
Created
competition. Nice job.
Well, I want to give a plug for something, and it was funny because I had mentioned to Luke that I just wanted to say, Luke, that I really love centralstandardtech.com.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, well, geez, you know, I really haven't done anything. I just sort of threw that together and I don't do anything. I said, well, what's great about it is being able to follow one feed and get all those people's updated posts. Mm-hmm. And specifically what I like is, and it's just little things. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but there are our calendar. You can do an iCal or a Google Calendar subscription for all the tech events. I mean, if you're a Ruby or a Groovy or a Java or whatever you're into, it can just show up on your calendar and there it is. And
yeah, it's a pretty cool tool. I will say that. And he did that, a couple of years ago?
Yeah,
I
mean,
it was like the first real aggregator of local tech stuff, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And it does serve a very useful purpose.
Yep, exactly.
I got to get it back in my reader. For some reason, it's not in there, or I don't hit it every. But I suppose I could be seeing Garrick's writings about what his philosophy about Earl Shorteners if I was checking that every day. So
yeah. Well, what do you guys think? I wanted to ask a question about what you guys think about all the posts about the death of RSS. And, you know, and the big one was Steve Gilmore on TechCrunch saying, I don't even, you know, Google Reader's the top one. I haven't even checked mine for, you know, weeks and blah, blah, blah. What are your thoughts? Do you guys?
Well, it's actually happened to me pretty much. I mean, I'm switching over from Google Reader now to FriendFeed.
Really?
Yeah, because this whole real-time web thing, you know, that which I think Twitter's probably popularized more than anybody, is kind of where the web is at right now. I think that, you know, we're going to look back at this in a couple of years, and there's not going to be a lot of personal blogging anymore. There'll be, you know, blogs used for news and other things. But for us, I think we're going to be switching to the real-time web.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You definitely can feel, you know, it going in that direction. And I agree with you on blogging. I mean, I just can't blog that much more. I'm doing it all as microblogging, you know, and it's just changing the face of online content, I think.
You know, the next thing you guys are going to be saying is newspapers are dead. Jeez
Louise. Oh. Yeah.
What are newspapers?
Well, I don't know. I've never been a big fan of saying any delivery service is dead. I mean, I think it's especially in this space, guys, there are a lot of things that go out. You get out there and you start thinking, well, this is a better way. And you find sometimes it doesn't necessarily turn out that way. You all of us know. I mean, I just look at my bookmarks in, you know, my browser and realize all these things that I'm a part of or have followed or have signed up for that I used for about a week and said, this isn't really for me. And it just got replaced. So it's tough to say one thing has died when something new is coming on. But I can definitely see where you're coming from as far as the real-time web versus a reader.
Yeah. Right. So I think RSS as a technology is obviously not dead. It's just the whole aggregator kind of model of consuming blogs and other things is pretty much going away, I think.
Well, and here's what I wrestle with. On my iconnectdots.com blog, I did a post about, if you remember William F. Buckley when he was alive, you know, he did Firing Line, the TV show, and the National Review. And he was one of the famous people for having just this disaster of an office. There was crap everywhere, magazines and papers and blah, blah, blah. And the picture that I put of his office, I put another picture of a Canadian film producer who had created a documentary called My Messy Life. And it was about how, you know, his office looked the same way. It was just this disaster. And my whole point to the Post was, I can't pay attention to 100% of what everyone does and what everyone says and what everyone is participating in. I can't even do it for, you know, a dozen people because I can't take care of my own life. I mean, I can't organize, you know, I can't keep track of my own stuff and my kids and my wife. And so what I like about blogging is being able to edit and be able to encapsulate a chunk of value. If it's a story or if it's an aggregation or whatever, I agree that the real-time web is fundamentally important. But at the same time, you know, there's got to be a middle road, because what I think about is, you know, when everybody had 16 millimeter or 8 millimeter film cameras, there were tiny little snippets of things shot. And then when video came and the cost of a tape was nothing, you know, and I was probably the worst offender. I have a 45 minute tape of my daughter as an infant sleeping. So,
oh my God.
I know. Now, do you think anyone else wants to watch that? Probably not. Maybe, you know, 8 seconds worth, but you know, it just goes to show that, you know, you can take, you know, go on and on and on. And which was cool about the 140 character limit in Twitter was that it forces you to just cut to the chase, get to the essence, really, really make sure that you're using your words carefully and saying the right things. And I think it's a mass discipline that's frankly awesome in a day of trying to pay attention to all these other places. But, I'm just wondering what the middle ground will be.
I think basically you're sort of saying that the quest here is to find the one perfect solution. And there is no one perfect solution. You're in a space of innovation. So I kind of look at it as utilizing different tools for different situations. And because you're not going to find that one perfect model.
Right.
And I don't think anybody should try to find that one perfect model. So if you're in this space to find the quest for the one thing, you're not going to find it.
Right. Hey, if Twitter and microblogging forces just shorter blog posts in general, I think that's a good thing. You
okay.
Know?
I think that's happening. That one was targeted to you, Steve. I felt that was a shot.
No, I think people are realizing they got to net things out and these long rambling posts, you know, that are kind of history. I think, you know, it was fine when blogging started, but blogging is changing because of microblogging services. I seriously think that.
I still think the best use for Twitter for me has always been the link back to a blog. Mm-hmm. I would much rather spend a little bit more time with a subject that interests me than, you know, these little fragments of stuff that are just sort of fleeting to me. So, yeah, I think that the microblogging technology is interesting. It's fun to be part of, and it can yield some great benefit. But I still think long form, whether that's on the screen or on the page or whatever, is still, you know, it's still got a lot of, I don't know, intrigue. Yep.
It allows you
to focus on one thing. And if that's the one thing that you're going to find with the Twitter generation, is the ability to focus on one thing is not very good. So I'm very much excited about the time where you can spend, instead of 1 second or 10 seconds on a bunch of different things, is going ahead and spending 15 minutes on one thing.
Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting? Yeah. Here's the thing, though. And if you talk to anybody that does research or anybody that, you know, does ideations or has innovation models they follow, is you don't just run fast in real time and do things quickly and throw things out there and all of that. Is you have to take time to just walk away from it and contemplate mm-hmm. it and think about it and let it sort of sink in. And, you know, it's just like some of the neuroscience research that's coming out now that is talking about the efficacy of 8 hours of sleep and why the human brain needs that time to basically file things away in long-term storage. And then if you don't take the time to sleep, your brain isn't doing that. And as a consequence, you know, it has all these negative repercussions.
That's it. That's it. You've hit us. You hit upon the answer to something that has plagued me for the last week.
And what's that?
This week. No, at the end of last week, I forgot my PIN number to my ATM card. Okay. And I think it's the web's fault. Could be that I'm getting older or anything, got it?
No. Hey, by the way, our new sponsor is Viagra. And, actually, you know, when all those ads come on for Cialis and Viagra and all that, my son, who's 14 and 6'1", 190 pounds, by the way, looks like he's 25, looks at me and says, "Dad, you're not listening." It's just like, shut up, Alex, just shut up.
Just, can somebody tell me how did Cialis get to the bathtub thing? Could somebody explain that to me?
Just out of I don't get that either. Yeah, the two bathtubs.
Yeah.
I mean, not a two-person hot tub, man. But two individual old bathtubs. You know,
I think you'd have to be a pretty special guy to be able to make love to somebody in another bathtub. I think,
Really? Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? On that note, what a perfect segue into stopping. we've been at this for a while, and we started out with a gorgeous sunny day, and now it looks like it's going to rain. So
you know, this is interesting because I've been in broadcasting for years and radio shows, podcasts, all sorts of things. Nobody has ever said, "What a great segue into stopping."
We're trying to reinvent radio.
Yeah, here, exactly. You know? Yeah, this is a whole new
great
whole new
concept.
Thing.
What a great way to end this bitch.
All right, guys. Hey, thank you and have a great weekend, eh?
Yeah, you too.
There you go, eh?
Yeah.
Somebody go fishing.
Yeah, no kidding. Alrighty. And by the way, if in fact there are any mothers out there, have a great Mother's Day tomorrow.
We have a lot of mothers listening, I think.
Yeah, so do I actually.
I believe mine, you know, mother in my house is outside the door saying, "What's going on?"
Yeah, exactly.
We're gonna have to watch our language if we have mothers listening, aren't we?
Well, no, not if they're young. All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Talk to you later, guys.
Bye now.
I'll see you.